Welcome to Total Network Operations, the podcast dedicated to hardworking network operators like you who deliver all the right packets. Here on the TNOps podcast, we want to shine a bright light on best practices and great ideas in NetOps so you can take away useful ideas and make informed decisions for your network and for your team. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internet plumber, Scott Robon. Now, on today's episode, you've heard all about it, Cisco Live. It's one of the premier vendor events in the networking and broadening tech space with a great combo of vendor and partner info, as well as a really good time. It's been a long time since I've been, but you see all the social media interaction. To give us a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to move all those packets at Cisco Live, it's my great pleasure to welcome Jason Davis to the pod today. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Scott.
I won't get too far ahead of Jason here, but I've had the great pleasure of getting to know him through multiple venues and hear about his role at Cisco Live. And he does a lot more than Cisco Live. We'll get into that today. But thank you for coming on today, Jason. Let's start out with telling us more about yourself, what you do, and how you found your way into your current roles.
Sure. I'm Jason Davis. I'm based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And I've been working for Cisco for almost 25 years. The joke is I was about 10, like Master Chief, and abducted when I was 10 years old and brought into Cisco. But I've had a wonderful career. I was in sales for a bit, services. Now I'm in our DevNet organization, and I'm a distinguished engineer at Cisco, which is kind of a cool role because it allows us to be on the executive track without being a people manager. So you can still be an individual contributor. The next highest role within Cisco is a fellow, and that's like a vice president level type role. So we've got about 300 distinguished engineers at Cisco, and it's a really great opportunity. We get to integrate with a lot of customers, work on cool technologies. And in the DevNet team, I lead special projects and technical strategy.
I hear such great things about, the DE role and that extra interaction with engineering in particular. I've been really fortunate to be able to have lots of DE interaction at another major network equipment vendor. And that was one of the most satisfying things of my career, what I was able to do in an SE leadership role. I don't know why they let me in the room for some of the conversations they had, but anyway,
yeah.
Tell us a little more about the DevNet org. What's its charter? What do you guys do?
Sure. DevNet is about developer evangelism. So you think back about a decade when software-defined networking, SDN, became in vogue. And one of the things that came along with that was the idea about network programmability and APIs. And it wasn't just the APIs in the management tools. It was also the APIs and management interfaces in the network plumbing, the devices, and this new idea about controller-based technology rather than managing every device atomically. And when you start to get into thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of devices, you just can't do it atomically. Sure. So DevNet is really about bringing folks that have a traditional route switch skill set and getting them off of the keyboards, which I jokingly refer to as finger-defined networking or FDN.
I love it.
Yeah. And bringing them into the age of APIs. And DevNet is about helping folks understand you've got some options here with APIs. Here's something that you can learn in Python. We've got all these cool APIs in our products, and you can get deep into the telemetry and instrumentation if you start to approach it that way rather than SSHing into a device or something.
But it works. Come on, that's the API I know. The CLI is an API. I know I'm not helping you here. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, And our team also was involved in the newer DevNet certifications. You've probably been familiar with the CCNA, yes, and CCNP, CCIE, CCDP, DE. And we also created the DevNet certifications. And I worked with a couple folks to write the Cisco Certified DevNet Professional book for DevCore. It's kind of a neat opportunity, get some training put out there. We have a code exchange. So when we build software for open source communities. We can put it out there and people can just gravitate towards it and start to contribute. I do a lot with open source management tools like Influx and Grafana and NetBox. And I wrote an interesting project a couple years ago called SSH to Influx, because I was still observing that a lot of the route switch folks were really enamored with certain metrics they could get only through a command line interface. And these weren't exposed in a SNMP MIB or a Yang model. And so I wrote a tool that would allow them to build a YAML file and say, here's the commands I want run. Here are the devices I want it run on. Here's the regular expression pattern to capture chunks of data and how to tag it. And it would put it right into Influx for you. And then you'd be off to the races to do a Grafana dashboard pretty quick.
Cool. Cool. That flexibility to automate and routinize stuff like that is super powerful.
Yeah.
Before we get too far away from your superhero origin story, you know, unless it's a supervillain origin story, I'll let you characterize it. I understand you had or have may currently have some military background. How does that play into what you do and where you've gotten today?
Yeah. So I went to the University of Miami in Florida, not Miami, Ohio, but right. The Hurricanes, the football school, right?
Right. Right.
And my path through college was through the ROTC program, and they paid for me to essentially go to a private university. And after I graduated, same day, I was commissioned a second lieutenant in the Army Signal Corps, and went to Fort Gordon, Georgia for several months to do the officer basic school. And then after that, I ended up being put into the reserves rather than the active duty component. But for 8 years, I was in reserves and did my civilian job, which took me through a company called Electronic Data Systems initially. Mm-hmm. It was Ross Perot's company.
Absolutely. Yeah. H. Ross Perot. Very good.
I'm all ears. Right. So I worked for EDS for several years, and that's where I got into like client server type systems and started learning a bit more about network management. And at that point, I had to make a decision what I wanted to do. And there were a lot of people that were into route switch. And I felt like I need to pick an area that I can have an impact in. And wouldn't you know it, network management's that redheaded stepchild that nobody really understands, but everybody needs help with.
Sure. And
while I was learning it, nobody could tell me I was wrong because they didn't know any better. So I purposely made that decision. And after a few years at EDS, I jumped over to Cisco and was in sales for several years, working at the automotives in Michigan, and a lot of cool experiences with GM, Ford, and Chrysler, and getting to expand my understanding of network management operations and automation and how it played into an automotive manufacturer. And yeah, it's cool.
I think like one of the things I've really appreciated in my career is if you're with a company for any amount of time, being able to fulfill different roles in a company. Mm-hmm. You know, I entered Juniper Networks as a trainer from a contract Cisco trainer position, mm-hmm. But then moved into the TAC for 5+ years, eventually moved into SE and SE leadership roles. And to see what the company does from multiple perspectives really kind of helps you understand mission. So I assume you've got some of those same perspectives.
I do. And having the Army officer side of that, even as a reservist, I believe helped me in my role in taking on larger projects and managing teams when I joined Cisco. Yes.
I find so many folks that have transitioned from military to civilian commercial life really bring those strong leadership qualities, right? You understand how to build and run a large scalable organization. I feel like that's a huge impact in the ops world for sure.
Sure.
So let's focus in on Cisco Live. Tell me how you got involved with it, how you've seen it evolve over the years, and we'll go down that path.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Cisco Live started back in 1989, even before I joined Cisco. It was called Networkers back then, and it had been run a few times in the U.S. They do an East Coast and a West Coast event. Now they traditionally just do one U.S. event, one Europe event, and then they'll do Australia, Melbourne. So three, maybe four times a year. When we first started out, we were using a technology company, a vendor, to just help us do the IT side of the event. And there are different companies out there that will help exhibitors with the IT when they go to a venue, right? Sometimes that's part of the venue's IT staff. Sometimes it's just a company in that city that will come and help set up access points and phones and digital signage and all those things, right? And so this was like way back. I've been doing the knock at Cisco Live for about 16 years now. So
wow,
probably about 17 years ago, another person who is now also a distinguished engineer at Cisco, his name's Joe Clark, and he's a good peer of mine. Joe and I got together, and we were both network management guys. He was in the TAC, and I was in advanced services doing the professional services side. So we're kind of yin and yang, and we, you know, do similar things, but he did the break fix and I did the proactive side. And we were looking around. It's like, why do we need, you know, this other company to come install and configure and operate the Cisco gear that we're bringing? Because this is our gear. And sure, at any one time, we can call down 1,000 CCIEs, you know, right, to help us with this. So for that first year, it was just Joe and I kind of shadowing this IT company that was doing the venue IT support to just see what they do. And then the next year we said, let's try to do this ourselves. And so the knock was really small, just like 8 people. And now we're upwards of like 30 people and another 15 or 20 Network Academy students that
awesome
actually come in and compete to have a slot to work with us for Cisco Live, and for in exchange for their help in rolling out equipment and such for 4 or 5 days after the setup period, they get the opportunity just to hobnob with all the rest of us folks at Cisco and see executives and keynote speakers and be recognized as, you know, Network Academy students that are up and coming in this IT discipline, and we appreciate them for helping us. But
what an awesome development opportunity. I wasn't aware of that. That's very cool. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, and so we, you know, keep touch with these folks as they're going through college or whatever, and most of them do end up going into an IT career, many of them into networking after having this experience working with us. And so, we just started building our own NOC, and, you know, you learn over time. Some companies talk zero defects. I don't necessarily like that kind of mindset. I'd rather, oh, I had a problem. Let's learn from it. See what we can do to monitor for that situation and make sure that have a visibility to it and move on from there. It's kind of hard these days. Obviously, there's Twitter and all these different social media venues that somebody can go in and just say, "Hey, I, you know, experienced a problem and all that." Sometimes that's also a good event receiver, if you will.
Sure. Yeah,
to monitor.
A different feed to ingest for sure. So, yeah. So how would you compare and contrast, you know, the operational environment, you know, that you're responsible for standing up and keeping up for a Cisco Live event versus, you know, an operator's operational network? I know we're not trying to claim that, you know, the Cisco Live network has the same exact pressure and business riding on it, but you've got some criticality in what you're doing for attendee experience, for making sure that, you know, everybody walks away with a great experience. How would you compare the two operational environments?
Well, I've had experience with a lot of enterprise and service provider companies, so they definitely do things a bit different because they have the opportunity to have a more relaxed rollout in a sense. Their planning cycles are longer. Their implementation cycles are longer, generally. For Cisco Live, the venue doesn't give us access to their wiring closets and to the hall spaces and the breakout rooms and all that until generally 4 or 5 days before our event. And we're paying for that early access.
And they've got other events there, I'm sure, right? And so, but yeah, so paying ahead, 5 days to set up the IT for empty rooms. Sure. Yeah.
And it's a concrete floor in a hall. It's, empty space with no chairs in a breakout room or classroom. And for 4 or 5 days, we're rolling out possibly thousands of access points, definitely hundreds of switches. And it kind of depends on that venue, if they're already a prior Cisco customer of ours and we have their access points are our products, we'll just go in and swing their access point from their wireless LAN controller over to the ones that we bring into our mobile shipping container, containerized data center, essentially. And it makes it easy to switch back and forth after the event. But if it's not a Cisco environment, or if it's an older Cisco environment and it doesn't reflect, the latest Wi-Fi 6 experience that we want people to have, you might see aluminum poles set up in hallways with access points on rigging and everything. And if you see that, it's either that situation, non-Cisco, older Cisco, or it could be that we just want to fill space in that area with better coverage. So it just kind of depends. Mandalay Bay, where we've done Cisco Live in Las Vegas for so many years, has been staying pretty close to upgrading their access points, and you don't see them because they've been professionally installed into their soffits and everything.
That's got to help if it's a repeat venue, right? You don't have to reinvent the wheel or do a setup from the ground up each time. So that's got to be a help.
Yeah, that helps. There's some staging that happens back in San Jose at our corporate headquarters, but again, you're rolling in with a couple semis worth of equipment in a mobile shipping container. You drop it off into this large conference hall, and then you say, "Where's the big 400 amps of power? Where's the internet fiber dropping from the ceiling?" And then you also have to think about things like, where do we send the condensate that comes out of these air conditioners inside that container? And, we had a problem many years ago where we didn't have a good drain, and you end up with like an inch of water right next to, a really large transformer that's splitting out all the power we need for the video display wall and for the containerized data center. And I was like, nah, I'm not going over there. That could be a shocking experience.
Right. Quite literally. I see what you did there, Jason.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So what is the 24 hours before the event starts looks like? What kind of testing do you do for the network, for your network management systems? What give us a little view into the pressure cooker there?
Yeah. So it all comes down to how quickly does that containerized data center get set up and powered and network connected. Once that all gets plugged in, then we can start to boot up our storage and our UCSX compute systems and all the virtual machines and management tools that we have in there. This year was a little bit different. We were playing around with a new mobile app for deployment because we were depending on another group of people called Tater Technologies in Las Vegas. So they're acting like staff augmentation and helping us to roll equipment out. But we wanted to give them access to what equipment we needed them to roll out. So we're using NetBox, right? And keeping track of things, written some scripts that will suck down the inventory from our virtual machine environment, from our wireless LAN controllers, from Catalyst Center, multiple sources of truth then feed that netbox. And the mobile app that we needed had to be supported into a colo, always on environment that was, you know, separated from whatever was going on prem, right? Because we couldn't guarantee that all of our stuff was going to be online at the same time that these folks were rolling out the new Catalyst 9200 compact switches all across the venue, right?
Right.
So we had NetBox running in a cloud environment that we have, and I wrote a little mobile app, and because we have this company Tater Technologies helping us, and because we're essentially handing over equipment to them, I decided to call the mobile app Hot Potato.
And how appropriate.
Yes. The Tater folks love it. We're handing over equipment. They can go into the mobile app and they say, okay, what equipment is awaiting deployment? Essentially, what equipment am I responsible for? They go grab a stack of switches. They know where they need to roll it out to. When they're done, they can use their mobile app and the camera to scan the barcode on that device and say, oh, we've deployed this device. It's been plugged into power, network connection, and then that would move it from awaiting deployment into a deployed state. That deployed state would then trigger my management tools to start doing health checks and say, yep, we can reach this device. It's authenticating correctly. You can log into it. It's supporting NetConf RPCs and blah, blah, blah. And now we start adding it into our monitoring dashboards. It comes into the availability dashboard, and it's essentially production for the event. And so that was a great little tool to help us bridge the gap from an always-on cloud-based environment to an on-prem situation where we need, you know, to plug in power and network and get things booted up, and boom, now we're all up and running. So, yeah.
I think that, so the choice to keep it all on-prem, you know, you have the cost of all the setup that's associated with that, but you have the control, you know, especially for quality of experience throughout the life of the event, you know, that's got to be the trade-off.
Well, for us, that's also an opportunity to show the products, right? Yep. And we can do both, right? We can show products in the cloud. We can show products on-prem. Yep. And people love to come up to the side of this mobile shipping container and the plexiglass side and see, you know, all the UCS and see our NetApp partnership and Legrand and all the wiring and wire management and everything. So it's a good case study.
Yeah, and having that real, I can see it, I can touch it. Mm-hmm. I can smell it, right?
Smoky ether coming out. Hopefully not.
do not let the magic smoke out of any of the network elements. That they stop working when you let the magic smoke out. Yeah. Especially that inch of water that you referred to earlier. But when you talk about this deployment app, mm-hmm. and were you consciously aiming for efficiency and getting things up and installed more rapidly, or what other objectives did you have there?
So we tend to stage different parts of the environment depending on when mm-hmm. those areas need to be running, right? So registration desk needs to be one of the first things that gets up. Then we also need to be thinking about Keynote. We need mm-hmm. to be thinking about the testing facility, the Cisco store, and then the breakout rooms. And the breakout rooms can be in the Mandalay Bay. They can be in another conference center, like we sometimes also take over MGM in Luxor mm-hmm. In Las Vegas. So we just kind of follow a plan of when does this area need to be open, and then make sure we deployed the equipment. And then you'd be surprised that sometimes the second day of a 5-day event, we're already tearing down certain areas because we know we don't need this space anymore, and we don't need to keep monitoring it. So having people look at NetBox as a, you know, it's a really good asset management tool, and it's not really meant to be a on-time or real-time status tool, but we're mm-hmm. using that device status field and the rich APIs of NetBox to update how a device is currently configured. And if one of the people that are involved in rolling the assets out decides, okay, we're going to recover this asset, they can just go into NetBox and say, this has now been decommissioned, right? And now that kicks off a webhook that deconfigures the monitoring. So we don't have a red device showing up on the dashboard. Nobody needs to get excited about it because it has been purposely, you know, decommissioned, right? So.
No, that's called having your act together to be able to tear down unnecessary, is you're reducing noise by, okay, we don't need that gear anymore. And you've got to have different, you know, pieces of the team to be able to go be tearing stuff down in the middle of the event and making sure they tear the right stuff down.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's day one, it's showtime.
Yeah.
What kind of incidents do you run into? Do you have any really, you know, good stories about resolving certain issues during the event? Give us that feel for what the full up production looks like.
Yeah. Well, I think we've been graced in that we've run pretty solid for many years, but we do have problems behind the scenes. Sometimes the redundancy masks that from what the attendees would see. But I can think of something that happened about 8 years ago where we were running the event in Las Vegas and things were going pretty good for a few days. And then all of a sudden, oh, we can't get anywhere on the internet. What just happened? And so this kind of goes back to that zero defects comment earlier.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
One of the things that we weren't doing was monitoring the size of the internet routing tables. So we learned that, hey, this is something we should track, right? And it's okay to have a variance of 3 or 4% of the routing table size. There's going to be networks that are added and removed all the time. But sure. If we start to see 10%, 15%, 20% loss, then, hey, that's our trigger to start calling our upstream service provider and say, hey, what's going on? And we learned many years ago that there had been a service provider upstream from us that black holed us off the internet. And it took us a bit to get that fixed. So now we proactively monitor things like internet routing table size. When we started going to multiple 100 gig interface connections to the internet, we started going to more carrier grade laser optics and things of that nature. We thought we should be monitoring optical transceiver power levels, right? Because we can see how good the signal strength is. And if it goes below a negative 15 dBm, then okay, maybe there's a problem with a bent fiber somewhere or what? So we are monitoring interesting metrics like that, because there's a lot of cool telemetry and instrumentation that's built into this network plumbing that you might not recognize if you're just looking at, you know, a fairly generic or commercial management tool where some software developer somewhere said, this is what you need to look at, right?
Sure. Sure. Is there any conduit, formal or informal, for you to take like ideas that you've developed from monitoring for Cisco Live and actually get them to like your advanced services teams, resident engineers? Like that would be a really, you know, useful sharing of intellectual property, right? Or things that you come up with that could be useful to other customers.
Yeah, the actual group that runs the events like Cisco Live and the current one that's running right now, which is called GSX. It's our sales conference for just the sales team, and it's like Cisco Live in many ways, but without customers and without a lot of the other vendors that come. And so they still do internal training and all that, and it's still in Mandalay Bay and we end up using a lot of the same equipment.
Sure.
But where were we going with that?
Ideas for tools to other external customers.
Yeah, right. So the actual team called Technology Experiences, there's only about 16 people in that events marketing group. And they do all those events, Cisco Live, GSX, Partner Summit, PGA Tour things, mm-hmm. and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they need help from other people outside of or inside of Cisco. So I'm part of DevNet. I'm not part of marketing. So right. I'm actually a volunteer to help the NOC team. And we have people from services, we have people from sales, we have people from product team that actually sit in the NOC, and there's some good exchange back and forth. And a lot of the dashboards that you see in the video display wall are my creation. Unless it's a commercial management tool, it's probably mm-hmm. not, you know, but if it's a Grafana dashboard or something that looks like a 2000s early CSS1 kind of HTML, then it's probably something I developed. And that information is often exchanged back into the product teams. And we developed something that was really cool with heat maps to show channel utilization and transmit receive utilization, client mm-hmm. counts and such. And the product team's like, how'd you build this? And I'm like, it's the built-in telemetry and instrumentation of our products. You just got to get in there with some NetConf RPCs and do some grabbing of that data and figure out how you want to render it. And then, you know, we find things when we're digging into Yang models and such, like there's a new Wi-Fi 6E client opera or client capable metric. And what that means is somebody has a device that is capable of Wi-Fi 6E, the 6 mm-hmm. gigahertz spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. So when they connect to the Wi-Fi, there's a capabilities exchange between that client and the network infrastructure. And that client says, hey, I can do 6E. What are you capable of doing, access point? Access point says, well, I can do Wi-Fi 6, but only on the 2, 4, and 5 side. So that's what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. But we keep track of that client's capability to do better. And so I started grabbing that metric and putting it on a dashboard panel and said, look, here are the number of devices that could have a better experience if the infrastructure was supporting all the way up to Wi-Fi 6E. So that is actually a good way to provide a real number to drive an upgrade cycle rather than it being conjecture and emotion.
Sure.
Yeah.
Here's a real benefit you'll get, like based on data that we've observed from the operational network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This sounds like a great little lab, right? A kind of a, not just a lab, right? You know, again, customers will often accuse vendors of you're treating my network like a lab.
Yeah.
You have a little more freedom, I would think, to do this here, but,
yeah.
What about referring and driving, you know, ops related product requirements back into your business units? Again, any formal or informal channels that you've like, hey, you found this at Cisco Live and you'll go to the 9200 team or you'll go to the Meraki team with ideas for things they could implement?
We actually have some Meraki and Catalyst wireless product managers that Perfect. Sit in on the NOC with us. That's we also smart. Have, if you've heard of the CAP program, the Critical Accounts Program at Cisco. Yeah,
absolutely. You just triggered me. I've tried to implement a CAP program at another vendor, and you know, critical doesn't mean they're doing well. Critical yeah. means they need some help and love and tender care.
Yeah. So for those that aren't familiar with it, I mean, you have the technical assistance center or TAC level of support where you call in for right. help. There's a program beyond TAC that we call CAP or Critical Accounts Program. And that's like, hey, my business is down and I need all hands on deck support. And that group is smaller within Cisco, but they have a lot of the break fix and the urgency along with a budget to help. You know, hey, we need to grab the best expert we have on network management or some routing protocol or whatever. And they have the authority to go grab people, buy equipment to get a customer whole. And our CAP program usually sends a couple people to sit in the NOC with us. So if we have a critical problem where we have a device fail, we can say, and we've had that happen before where a power supply would fail or something. And the CAP team would go find where's the closest depot with that switch power supply and get it overnighted to us. And we're back up and running the next morning, you know, before attendees are showing up. So CAP is a good program. And having the product managers sitting in with us, we also have an ability to open defects and tag it that, hey, we saw this happen, some problem with open roaming or something like that, or this management tool has a problem understanding certain client data types, then we can open those defects and they go right to the product team. They know that they can trust the report because it came from, you know, Cisco colleagues at an event and all that.
Very fascinating. That's incredible. Let's kind of take this and maybe tease on the DevOps conversation here. This is seems like a great environment, again, for you to, you're bringing dev and operations folks together and probably even a broader profile of team, you know, per some of the comments you've made here. How, what's your view of like having a net DevOps perspective for Cisco Live network execution?
Well, it's critical. We still have quite a few folks in the NOC that are, you know, focused on their domain specialty, right? And I'm one of the folks. We have a few that are also operations and developer focused. So we can pair up, which is really kind of that notion of what DevOps was about, working with somebody who is operationally focused on a certain product, domain, feature, whatever, with a developer and get the best out of both individuals' expertise. So when our wide area network engineer says, hey, I need some help monitoring these optical transceiver power levels, I know how to get that out of this ASR 9000. Jason, do you know how to take this information and get it into a database and onto a dashboard and have it happen every few minutes and do it with some resiliency? And that's how we roll. So, you know, we've done fun things like this SSH to Influx project, which allows an engineer who knows those show commands that may be like 7 or 8 parameters long, that extract some interesting ASIC register that never gets exposed in a MIB or a Yang model. And he wants that. And I'm like, okay, well, here's a cool Python project that we put up on DevNet Code Exchange and GitHub. And you can fill out a YAML file that says, here are the commands that I want executed against the devices I need, and what the regular expression pattern match would be, and how to tag it into Influx. And then boom, we're now gathering DBMs of optical transceiver power levels, and we're doing fan speeds and sustainability metrics for power supply efficiencies and all the things that people think are important to them, and they can implement pretty quickly.
You know, equipment vendors are in a great position with an event like this to be able to bring all those resources together at the same virtual point in time and space and like have all the right skills on the team to be able to tease that stuff out. Do you think, like, so your background in network management, obviously you come in with a more software-centric view of the world, not necessarily a pure router or switch jock like some of us grew up. Do you feel like that set you up to be more amenable to the whole DevOps framework? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but tell me what you think about that.
I do. I mentioned in my career, I purposely made a choice to do network management and operations, but you know, I'm conversant with being able to set up routing protocols. I just probably not the best person to talk about the merits of route reflectors and how to set them up and, you know, as such, but it's establishing a common vocabulary. And once you get that vocabulary with, you know, the person and the developer operations person, then you can do some really cool things. The need for people to have an operations understanding is really important, because if people are still stuck with command line interface, like, you might be okay if you're just looking at a dozen devices, but, you know, we're doing 600 Catalyst 9200 compact switches, and there's no way that you're just going to sit there and log in to 600 switches and check things out without brutal automation. So
I can do that. I'll do it tonight. I won't sleep. I'll just do it. And I'm being silly, but, you know, there are traditional network engineers that'll, you know, hey, I appreciate what you're doing from an automation perspective, and you go. Yeah. Just don't expect me to participate in it, because I want to do this the old fashioned way. Mm. And they'll do it until they burn out, right? Instead of leveraging new tools. And it's a, like, there's management and leadership responsibility on helping your team upskill, right? And get to know those new tools that can make your life a lot easier and help keep the network, you know, up better, more resilient, more stable. So,
and it, opportunities like Cisco Live, even in my career, have afforded me the opportunity to learn how to upskill. Those early days of, okay, automate, but you're automating sequentially. So here's 500 switches. You're logging into one after another, running commands and storing information. Well, oh, wow, it took 15 minutes to get through 500 of those. And that's too long of a polling cycle for some of the metrics. So that afforded us the opportunity to look at things differently. What if we start to look at some of these newer capabilities like async IO and async SSH and Python scripts that can do more work with more devices in a shorter period of time, and take that 15 minutes to do 500 devices down to 90 seconds because we started doing things asynchronously and bumping up the game in our Python skills? So,
very, very cool. Well, as we wind down, let me ask you, and this is a surprise question. Is there an outage you've ever caused that you'd like to admit to today? Or you could speak generically, and do you know of a really interesting outage that you had a hand in resolving, Cisco Live or other?
There was an outage in our monitoring. It wasn't an outage that was service impacting, but I take responsibility for it because I wasn't completely monitoring the health of our Oracle database. And I ran into a situation where I ran out of space. We're collecting so much data, right? Sure. And so it's kind of nice that NetApp's sitting there giving us like 96 terabytes of all flash storage, but I'm sitting here, you know, I got 2 terabytes for my Oracle database, and another terabyte for MySQL, and another terabyte for Influx, and all this. And I wasn't paying attention to what was going on the Oracle side, and it filled up, and it's like graphs started just stopping, right? Just no data. I was like, oh, great. Now I got to go in and figure out how to quickly ram up another terabyte into Ubuntu and, LVS extend, you know, these volumes. And so you learn. And again, zero defects. I learned, dude, it's not just about monitoring routers and switches. It's also about monitoring, you know, the other embedded services that are necessary, like this Oracle database size. Now I can tell you, I can go in and look at how big my Influx DB is and all the wall files, and same thing with MySQL, and not worry so much about, oh, I need to go smack in another terabyte of disk on the system. So.
But it's a holistic system, right? And you need to understand how it all fits together, right? And again, for all those Cisco Networking Academy folks listening in, you have the opportunity to compete for the pain at Cisco Live. Jason will be happy to help you with that. Last fun question here. As you're setting up, you know, those 4 or 5 days before, do you have a favorite playlist or music you like going on in the background, or you just have to put up with whatever Mandalay Bay is playing?
Yeah, I do wear my headphones because it's also a way for us to gauge how well the wide area network's going if we're streaming audio.
We
stream a video feed 24/7. We stream an audio feed besides all the Thousand Eyes things. But even during setup, before we have a lot of that rolling, if we stream anything, it's a good indicator of, hey, we're having problems. Maybe folks don't know this about me, but I'm person of a strong personal faith. And so I'm sitting here and I'm streaming essentially Christian music and enjoying myself and just being encouraged by what I'm listening to.
Sure.
And when we had the final Cisco Live Knock session, the absolute last session of the event, and we show like, here's the top 20 websites and such that have
right.
gone on. Somebody said, what is K-Love? And I'm like,
the radio station.
So yeah, it's yeah. a radio yep. online radio yep. station. Yep. And so I said, yeah, that was me just for the last 7 days streaming, you know, the music that I like. And it just happened to make the top 20 list. So. Yeah.
Well, I empathize and relate to that. You and I share that faith, and I would probably listen to a lot of Phil Keaggy. He's one of my favorite musicians of all time. I'll mix other stuff in there too, but that's awesome. Any nuggets for folks in the ops arena today? Like if you could, you know, say here are one or two things you should be thinking about to advance in your ops career and beyond, what advice would you give people?
I think, you know, it starts with understanding the information that's out there. If you don't have information, then you're making decisions based on emotion and conjecture. So, you know, really start to dig in with Yang models. If you're still doing stuff pretty legacy, you might look at SNMP MIBS, but to be honest, SNMP is kind of legacy, and we haven't done anything with SNMP outside of whatever the commercial tools are doing for 6-7 years in the Cisco Live Knock. And there's web scalers out there that don't do anything with SNMP, right? And everything's NetConf and gRPC and GNMI and all that. But taking a look at what your equipment supports in the embedded telemetry and instrumentation is important to understand what your capabilities are. And if you don't sure. know that, then again, you're starting from nowhere. and sometimes you're going to find cool things like that Wi-Fi 6E client upper metric that we were talking about
yeah,
earlier.
Sure.
That's like, wow, that's interesting. What can I do with that? Right. And yeah.
Cool. Well, look, I appreciate this. This has been a great conversation. No surprise. I knew it would be good, you know, coming into this. If people have questions or just want to reach out to you, Jason, what's the best way for people to reach you?
Well, I'm on Twitter as SNMP guy.
See, you're yes. not going to change that handle anytime soon, are you?
No. It's also a license plate on my truck. So if you're in North Carolina and driving around,
that's hilarious.
SNMP guy, then you know what's SNMP guy is usually the question people have. So I'm on Twitter, SNMP guy, LinkedIn, Jason C. Davis. Reach out.
Awesome. I'm sure there will be folks that take you up on that. Jason Davis, Cisco DE, one of the key people behind keeping Cisco Live up. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you everyone else for tuning in to Total Network Operations. TNOPS is a growing project. We'd love your feedback, topics you'd like us to cover and people you'd like to hear from. If you know someone or you are someone with important things to say about NetOps, let us know. These episodes provide a channel to promote best practices and big ideas from Jason and many others, and they force me to do lots of research, and I really dig it. I love hearing the stories. I love stretching into different tech and topic areas. And I have the goal of seeing what we can distill from all these conversations, you know, like a research project and turn it into more useful information in 2025 and beyond. Also, it would be great if you enjoyed this today to spread the word on TNOPS, get others involved in the conversation. You want to contact me, drop me a DM on LinkedIn or send us a follow-up at packetpushers.net/follow-up. Thank you and see you next time on TNOPS.